She heard guitar music. At the same time, she felt her control over the hand stuffing money back into her pocket and the legs swinging out of the cab begin to ebb. Mia taking over again now that Susanna had solved another of her little New York dilemmas. Susanna began to struggle against this usurpation. My body, goddammit, mine, at least from the waist up, and that includes the head and the brain inside it. And then quit. What was the use? Mia was stronger. Susanna had no idea why that should be, but she knew that it was. A kind of queer Bushido fatalism had come over Susanna Dean by this point. It was the sort of calmness that cloaks the drivers of cars skidding helplessly toward bridge overpasses, the pilots of planes that heel over into their final dives, their engines dead, and gunslingers, driven to their final cave or draw. Later she might fight, if fighting seemed either worthwhile or honorable. She would fight to save herself or the baby, but not Mia. This was her decision. Mia had forfeited any chance of rescue she might once have deserved in Susanna's eyes. For now there was nothing to do except maybe to turn the labor force dial back to 10. She thought she would be allowed that much control. Before that, though, the music, the guitar. It was a song she knew, and knew well. She had sung a version of it to the Falcon the night of their arrival in Colibrin Sturgis. After all she had been through since meeting Roland, hearing Man of Constant Sorrow on this New York street corner did not strike her as coincidental in the least. And it was a wonderful song, wasn't it? Perhaps the avatar of all the folk songs she had so loved as a younger woman, the ones that had seduced her step by step into activism and had led her finally to Oxford, Mississippi. Those days were gone. She felt ever so much older than she had then, but this song's sad simplicity still appealed to her. The Dixie Pig was less than a block from here. Once Mia had transported them through its doors, Susanna would be in the land of the Crimson King. She had no doubts or illusions about that. She did not expect to return from there, did not expect to see either her friends or her beloved again, and had an idea she might have to die with Mia's cheated howls for company. But none of that had to interfere with her enjoyment of this song now. Was it her death song? If so, fine. Susanna, daughter of Dan, reckoned there could have been far worse. 3. The busker had set up shop in front of a cafe called Blackstrap Molasses. His guitar case was open in front of him, its purple velvet interior exactly the same shade as the rug in Cy King's Bridgeton bedroom, can you say amen? Scattered with change and bills, just so any unusually innocent passers-by would know the right thing to do. He was sitting on a sturdy wooden cube, which looked exactly like the one upon which the Reverend Harrigan stood to preach. There were signs that he was almost through for the night. He had put on his jacket, which bore a New York Yankees patch on the sleeve, and a hat with John Lennon Lives printed above the bill. There had apparently been a sign in front of him, but now it was back in his instrument case, words side down. Not that Mia would have known what was writ upon it, in any case, not she. He looked at her, smiled, and quit his finger-picking. She raised one of the remaining bills and said, "I'll give you this if you play that song again. All of it this time." The young man looked about 20, and while there was nothing very handsome about him, with his pale, spotty complexion, the gold ring in one of his nostrils, and the cigarette jutting from the corner of his mouth, he had an engaging air. His eyes widened as he realized whose face was on the bit of currency she was holding. "Lady, for $50 I'd play every Ralph Stanley song I know, and I know quite a few of them." "Just this one will do us fine," Mia said, and tossed the bill. It fluttered into the busker's guitar case. He watched its prankish descent with disbelief. "Hurry," Mia said. Susanna was quiet, but Mia sensed her listening. "My time is short. Play." And so the guitar player, sitting on the box in front of the cafe, began to play a song Susanna had first heard in The Hungry Eye, a song she had herself sung at God only knew how many hootenannies, a song she'd once sung behind a motel in Oxford, Mississippi.